It's Tuesday, March 10th, and you're listening to the Geek News Central podcast, sponsored by GoDaddy.com. Geek News Central is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Hey everyone, this is the last show from Japan, and yes, I'm headed home. Got a lot to talk about today. Got a great show lined up for you, so strap in. Here it comes.
Coming to you from a dimly lit hotel room with bad Wi-Fi and not enough power outlets, here's everyone's favorite jet-lagged geek, Todd Cochran.
Konnichiwa and welcome to the Geek News Central podcast, coming to you as live as it can be from Okinawa, Japan, via the Geek News Central portable studio. I want to welcome you all up to the show. Of course, my name is Todd Cochran. You can find all the great podcast content from this show over at geeknewscentral.com. Check on that podcast link. That'll get you all of the archived podcasts, of course, all of the current shows as well. Of course, make sure you get subscribed to the podcast. You can do that via the iTunes link, the Zune Marketplace link, or even just add the RSS feed to your favorite podcatcher. You can find this show is released every Tuesday and Friday, and we always welcome comments back on the show at geeknews@gmail.com, geeknews@gmail.com, or you can call our voicemail hotline and leave comments on the show at area code 619-342-7365. I want to welcome all of the Ohana to the show. Welcome you guys to the podcast. Of course, our Ohana are our longtime listeners, people that are part of our family. Of course, really, anyone that listens to the show is part of the Ohana. The show is normally recorded out of Honolulu, Hawaii, but I am currently in Okinawa, Japan. Just got a few days left here before I'm getting on an airplane to head home. I'll be back in Honolulu Thursday morning, so I'll be doing the typical Friday show from Hawaii, and had a little bit of a change. I am not going on any additional travel. I'm going to be staying home at least for approximately 2 weeks before I head out to the East Coast for a special event, and I'll be talking about that in some upcoming shows. Well, I got a lot of great content for you today, and it's a beautiful day here in Okinawa. I just have to share with you, it's for the last week, it's done nothing but rain. And, of course, the day I kind of get caught up with everything and things are slowing down here with meetings and the consulting and everything, the sun comes out and shines, and it's absolutely beautiful. So I'm actually getting the show recorded relatively early in the afternoon. It's almost my normal record time back in Honolulu. It's 4:20 in the afternoon here, 9:20 in Hawaii. But I'm already, way ahead of you guys, time-wise. So it's still Monday evening in Honolulu, and it's Tuesday afternoon here. Hey, do want to share with you, I had spoken on the last show that my grandmother, who is 98, was in very bad shape. And shortly after the show came out on Tuesday, I did get word that she had passed. And I've been on the phone quite a bit with my mom over the last couple of days, trying to determine exactly what I'm going to do. And based on where I'm at, travel time involved, trying to get there on time, I probably will not be going home to the funeral. It is with a heavy heart that I am not going to be able to do that, but I've spent some time and written some things up, and I'm sending over to the pastor that will be, I guess I don't know what the word is, officiating during the actual funeral ceremony, I guess. But boy, oh boy, what a tough woman and a great woman. Lots of great advice to me over the years. And, you know, everyone has somebody special in their life that had always, you know, that does have given you good advice and maybe steered you through that advice and never really telling you which way to go. I'm going to let you come to your own conclusions. And she was that woman, very strong and very business savvy, taught many, many, many children to read. She did tutoring for many years for children that were having issues with reading skills, and down-to-earth woman. So she is going to be sorely missed, but she is definitely in a better place, considering after 98 years, her body, really, the quality of life was not good. And really, it was not good at all. And So in one hand, sad to see her having passed, but thankful at the same time that she is no longer ridden with this body that didn't work anymore. So anyway, I thought I'd share that with you guys, but at 98 years, it's more of a celebration of a long life than it is of a, you know, of a tragedy. It's not. It's, you know, she lived a very strong and long life, but very tough right out to the very, very end. As I said, I'm heading home. I'm going to be flying back on United Airlines going through Narita. And just wanted to share with you guys my experience here with using a mobile broadband device. And I tell you, I don't think the Japanese are any further ahead in mobile. I think they're behind. I think they're more behind than we are on mobile broadband. I've been able to use my laptop with my Sprint EVDO card almost any place in the United States, even in country, even where my mom lives, where it's generally a more rural area. I've had great success in recent years using that card there. I'm here in a very big metropolitan area, and it's the coverage is just absolutely sporadic. Now, I don't know if it's just Okinawa or if it's because of that. Almost sneezed on you. But the just have not had good luck with it. So I think if I do a future trip out here, I will not rent a mobile broadband card because I did not get very much usage out of it. Now, I was able to make the one I had work this time, and when it did work, it worked well. But many times I could just no service, and it drove me absolutely crazy. It really did. So I'll be dropping that gear off at Narita when I go through and getting my bill. just to let you know, when I'm here in Japan, I rented a cell phone. The cell phone cost me $2.65 or 265 yen per day to rent with calls back to the United States at about 70 cents a minute, which is pretty high. So I used a lot of Skype. I did do some regular dialing through, and then all in Japan phone calls were basically unlimited and free. Unless I was going cell phone to cell phone, then there was an incurred a little bit of a fee, especially if they weren't on the same carrier. I used a company called SoftBank here. So that kind of gives you an idea. Now, the mobile broadband card was $10 a day, or 1,065 yen was the price. So almost $11 with the exchange rate. So I would say I did not get my money's worth here during this trip. Hey, I do want to encourage all of the new listeners to the show, if you're new to listening to the Geek News Central podcast, to make sure you get over to geeknewscentral.com, sign up for our newsletter, so you get the newsletter of, basically the newsletter contains everything that I'm going to talk about during the show tonight. It's going to have links to all of the articles and information that is covered, including items that have been submitted by listeners, and you can basically you'll get that in your inbox and have that available to either follow the show, or if you miss a show, you'll be able to catch up on the links that I talked about. We always encourage you to listen to the show. Of course, that's the most important part, because I'll always share stuff in the show that are not necessarily in the show notes. Now, one thing I'm going to be doing is I'm going to be doing a new segment in the podcast. I got to thinking about this the other day, and this was through a conversation I was having with a gentleman I know, and we are talking about iPhone apps. And I'm not going to limit the discussion to just iPhone apps, but it's basically going to be a phone app segment where I would like, initially, I'm going to be choosing some applications to talk about, and we're not going to start on this show. I'll probably start either in the next show or maybe the week following, but I'm going to pick two apps per show to talk about, spend a little bit of time talking about the apps. I will have tried them and tested them out. So I'll have a segment within the podcast someplace. It's not going to be in the same section of the podcast every week. We're going to put it in, going to kind of play around with the structure of it. But if you have an app, if you're using an iPhone app, if you're using a Nokia N95 app, if you're using a G1 app, whatever app that you have that you love, that you can't live without, that you have to have on your mobile phone, if this is if you want to do even call in and talk about the app itself, You can do that via the voicemail hotline at 619-342-7365. You can actually give the review yourself on the app. Now, what I will do is I will definitely be buying all of the apps that everyone recommends. Well, not everyone, because you're going to end up having 100 apps a week that I would want to test out. And that's not going to fit in the budget. But I'll pick a couple every show to test and have run between shows. So if you submit your suggestion for me on an app to review, then what I will do is it will happen, you know, I would give each app, my review policy is usually about 72 hours. So I'll try to run the app either on the iPhone, on my iPod Touch. If I have to, I will, at some point, I guess I'm going to have to go out and get a Nokia N95 or whether one of the other phones so that we can test all the apps as a new added feature here on the show. So I hope that you guys will help me out with this. And if you have an app that you love that you absolutely can't live without, or something that's quirky or fun, the gamut is covered here. Kind of, we're going to try not to necessarily keep it on a technological level, but the more techy the app is, the more inclined I will be to talking about it during the show. So that's kind of what's happening, and nothing else is really going on here. Kind of, I guess, as people would say, everything is on the straight and straight. We're continuing to move forward. But I am definitely, my wife said it's warming up in Honolulu. We've had quite a cold spell, so I'm looking forward to getting home. I do have, I'm really guilty here. I have a number of videos I still have to push up from CES. I'm just absolutely horrible. I haven't got them up. I've got 24-hour podcast audio and video coverage to put online. I'm woefully behind on that. But now that I've got all my taxes done, at least I'll be picking them up on the 13th, and really I'm kind of caught up. I'll be able to dedicate some time to doing this. Have not had any time at all to do it on this trip, but we're going to be having a roundtable here, I believe, on March. Let me look at the calendar. Andy was the one coordinating it, Andy McCaskey from /.review. On March 21st, we're going to have another roundtable where we're going to be inviting people in that we had talked to at CES to talk about their app or service or product. And I think that'll be a great segment. It was great last month. We had a huge, huge number of people that have come in. I think we've had about 55,000 people already download the last demo we did on the Tech Podcast Roundtable over at techpodcast.com. And I've actually got a prize that we've awarded to one of our listeners here from that event, something I have purchased that I hope to have sitting in my hot little hands when I arrive in Honolulu. So we're going to be doing more giveaways, and we're going to be ramping this up as we're on the march to 500 shows here at Geek News Central. So let's take care of a little business, of course, and this is really what keeps things going here. I appreciate all of your support for all of our sponsors and for you sharing the promo codes with your friends, family members, and so forth. We've actually got a testimonial today in one of the emails that come in on a GoDaddy product. And of course, GoDaddy has been the longest sponsor here at Geek News Central. We're approaching, at this point, nearly, I guess, what are we at, 4 years of continuous sponsorship of the show, and definitely appreciate that. So if you're over at GoDaddy.com and you're looking for a domain, you're looking for a shared hosting account where you can put up a website or a blog, if you're looking for a little more horsepower on the hood and you want to get a server or a virtual dedicated server or any of the other variety of services they have over there, or you've got some domains they're going to be renewing, don't forget my promo codes, okay? The promo code TODD will save you 10%. That's Todd. A ComSale will save you money on .coms that you're renewing, that you're buying. Geek5 will save you 15% on orders $20 or more. And of course, Todd20, this is the hot one, Todd20 will save you 20% on 1 year shared hosting accounts. Hey, I want to share a little thing that I did yesterday with GoToMeeting, and something I hadn't really thought of for a while. We were, you know, I have these meetings online, I have presentations, I do PowerPoints, and everyone's chatting. But last night, I was on the computer, and Angelo, our lead developer over at Raw Voice, he was up at 2 o'clock in the morning, and him and I were in the same, he was up and awake and I was up and awake. And so we were trying to catch up on things, and we're getting ready to release a new version of PowerPress. And Angelo said, you know, well, he took me into the site and showed me what he had added. And I really wasn't understanding a certain function. And he was chatting on IRC, and I was trying to, you know, figure out what's going on. I said, just wait a minute. Just wait just a second. So I right-clicked on the little GoToMeeting app. I said, meet now. The little application loaded. And I mean, you know, 15 seconds, it's loaded. There's a little button on there you copy the URL into. I pasted that into chat, and I said, join me in the GoToMeeting session. And, you know, within 30 seconds, he was in the GoToMeeting session. He put on his headset. I had my headset. And we had a conversation. And shared the screen and was able to look, and he able to walk me through. And, you know, and I was becoming frustrated with this online conversation I was having, and I forgot about the best tool that we have. And, you know, this is how this application just makes so much sense. And whether you're meeting with one person or 100, GoToMeeting is the best online meeting application. You know, you can do presentations, product demos, training sessions, and, you know, right from your computer, no matter where you're at, any place. And really, it is a great tool. So if you want a free 30-day demo, okay, you got to go to gotomeeting.com/tech podcast. That's with an S to get a free trial. It's gotomeeting.com/tech podcast for a free 30-day trial. We definitely appreciate it when you guys check that product out, and especially appreciative when you guys subscribe to the product and use it on a continual basis. So anyway, I just wanted to share kind of how I used it in the last show, and it really did work well. Hey, I've got a lot of stuff for you here tonight, and let me kind of close some of these windows. Let me make sure I look through my regular notes here. I do want to, it's one thing before we get into tech. How's the show been? With me on the go, on the road, with the introduction of the video stuff, how's the show been? Are you guys happy with the show direction? Are you happy? What are you disappointed with? Is there something that it looks like we could change? Part of the reason why I want to do this new introduction of this, talking about applications for phones, either be an iPhone, for the iTouch, before a Nokia, before Windows Mobile, or the G1. The reason I want to do that is because more and more, what I'm seeing, and I see it here more than anywhere else, and maybe because I'm a little bit isolated in Hawaii, and not seeing how people are using their phones as much, everyone is doing applications, consuming content, watching TV on their phones. Now, I don't know if that's occurring with you or you're doing that, but how much more are you depending on your phone than you are your laptop? Or are you getting you're processing your email? Or are you using your BlackBerry more? What are you guys seeing as trends? And that's what I want to talk a little bit about, is trending out some things that are happening here. And hopefully we'll find stuff that's more productive as well to help you guys with becoming more efficient in the things you do in these tough economic times. But I'm totally out of touch with what's going on with the news. The Japanese TV is, I have one English channel here. The rest of it's Japanese, so I'm getting re-indoctrinated into the language. But they got some weird shows here, folks. Very strange television shows. And it's only in Japan where you see this really weird stuff. But anyway, that's... If you have some feedback for the podcast, definitely send it out to geeknews@gmail.com or call the voicemail hotline at 619-342-7365. All right, let's go ahead and start right off here on the article. We'll get into an article that's talking about running Windows 7, the beta, on a MacBook. A lot of discussions on, I know some of you are already doing that, but I found a good article that talks about the deltas between running either running it on Parallels, VMware Fusion 2, or in Bootcamp. So this is a good article. I know many of you that are playing with Windows 7 are doing so on a MacBook, but a good review on this and kind of some challenges that the people went through in loading Windows 7. Talks about some driver issues and so forth, and gives you some resources on where to find information. It's a couple page article, and it really goes through each of the applications and talks about the challenges with each, or non-challenges as it may be. So I have this linked up, of course, for you in the show notes for you to check out. Hey, a little bit of information coming out of the BitTorrent world, and it's a model that's very interesting. And of course, we have a large set segment of United Kingdom listeners that listen to the show. Of course, I want to say hello to all those folks across the pond there. Actually, on the other side of the world completely from where I'm at right now. But, you know, in the UK, people have to pay a yearly fee for access to television signals. And it basically allows the government or allows the BBC to run the television there commercial-free. Now, if I've gotten something screwed up there, folks in the UK, you guys square me away. But I'm assuming that's generally how it works. That's not what I'm familiar with anyway. But in Norway, they have their own system. NRK, which is Norway's public broadcaster, has decided that BitTorrent distribution is really worked for them. And what this NRK, this Norway's Public Broadcasting Corporation, I guess the what do they call them, Norway's public broadcaster, received 94% of its revenues from a license fee paid by TV-owning households in the country, and it's charged with not making money, but with getting its content in front of as many people as possible. So what NRK has done is they've launched their own BitTorrent tracker, and it distributes TV shows, which are DRM-free, and they also, at the same time, distribute the programming with subtitles. So, you know, you've got the primary Dutch language being spoken on the on all these television shows, and then they subtitle them in multiple, in English and French and a variety of different languages. And I thought, wow, this is cool. They say their experiment with this has worked very, very well. Consumption has been very high. And they say that shows available legally via the NRK system have been downloaded over 90,000 times. And they are completely gangbusters with adding more of a model like this. Now, what would you guys think? Now, here in the United States, we pay our cable operators enormous sums of money each month to have access. Now, how much? My cable bill is ridiculous. I mean, it is simple. Of course, it's bundled with my internet bill. So I think I maybe pay about $60 or $70 a month, is maybe even $80 is my total for my cable connection. Now, you think about that, $80 a month. You divide that per day, you know, am I getting that kind of usage out of it? But doesn't it make more sense to go to a model where I just pay a one-time yearly fee and then everything's available online? You know, just make it all available online and I get what I want. Does that make more sense for the United States, or will it ever happen? Well, I think I know the answer to that. No, it will never, ever happen. Oh, they may make us pay like $5,000 a year or something like that to do that. But you know, this is kind of brings into a conversation I'm going to have a little later about Boxy and the ongoing battle they're having with Hulu. So we'll talk about that later. But, you know, this is great. It really is. And, you know, are you guys in the UK? Are you guys seeing are they doing any BitTorrent with any of their programming? Are they making it available that way? I know you can get it online via RSS feed and as a podcast download, whether it be a video file or an audio file. But can you also get it via BitTorrent? I'd love to hear you guys' thoughts on that. Okay, another cool article here is they're talking about cameras and megapixel settings. The folks at Olympus Imaging, who are responsible for the research and development of new Olympus cameras, are saying that essentially they've drawn a line in the sand and saying 12 megapixel cameras is really the most that any consumer or commercial entity would need for standard usages for most customers. And not all, but most. And the analogy is going on here is that in the early days when they were building cars, when they were building the Model T, you know, they were more worried about getting them out, and then they worked on the bells and whistles, and pretty soon, you know, you go from the Model T and you move 50, 60 years in advance, and what do you have then? You have, you know, you got Cadillacs, and you got Escalades, and you got all these fancy vehicles. Well, they're thinking now what's going to happen with digital cameras is we're moving into this zone where we've reached a megapixel size that is, you know, really doesn't need to go much beyond that for average use. Now we're going to start seeing the cameras being developed into having more tools in them. and, you know, transfer usability and, you know, pushing via the internet, all this stuff. So I'm kind of excited where we're going here because, you know, the delta between buying a, I bought three digital cameras over the past maybe 3 or 4 years. We bought a Rebel XT. We bought a, I have a Canon that I bought a while back. I have Olympus. And then for Christmas, I bought my wife a new Canon camera. It's a 10 megapixel camera. And really, the delta between the all of those cameras is very minor in picture quality. The reason I like the Canons better is they have fast shutter speed for their digital cameras. But really, no more additional quote-unquote cool features. So I think, and I think that's what we've seen when I'm going to stores and looking at cameras now. It's, you know, they're all a dime a dozen. They look the same, and they almost function the same. So I think what we're going to, do you guys think you're going to, are you guys excited about getting more functionality in your cameras? How many of you have picked up to a full body camera, went and picked up a Rebel, picked up a, you know, one of the new Canon full body cameras? You know, the cameras bodies aren't so bad, but buying those lenses, oh my goodness, they're expensive. But check it out. Check out this article. I think this is, he's got a lot of good points in this. All right, Google is doing something very interesting. And this is for those of you that are running on, have blogs on Blogger. You know, when the Digital Millennium Copyright Act was imposed, it was supposed to really allow copyright holders and those that were putting stuff up for fair use to have a some equilibrium balances. In other words, if I put something up that was completely abusive, let's say I posted somebody's copyrighted music or videos, you know, that company that owned that rights, that stuff, would have a right to come to my ISP and say, hey, I want you to take this content down. And they may do so, but I also have this ability to respond and say, okay, this is under fair use or whatever, and, you know, many times you could get that content turned back on depending on the circumstances. Well, Google's policy for handling DMCA notices seems to leave bloggers with scant hope of getting their improperly removed content restored. And a gentleman that has a music blog who legally was allowed to put up music that was being given to him by groups that were wanting him to promote their music and had actually given permission for him to post the media up is getting a lot of his content taken down, and he can't get it back up because there's really this archaic way of responding to Google. And, you know, in all honesty, what I'm going to say here is if you have your content on a network where it's closed. In other words, you don't have control of the servers or you don't have control of the data stream. You know, you're just asking for trouble. So, you know, always consider having your content stream on a site that you control, that you own, that you have the rights to. And even though you may still get a takedown notice, you still have the ability to get that content back online after going through, you know, whatever process you have to go through by responding to the DMCA notice. And but with people that are using Blogger at blogger.com, very little retribution, very little response process. So I have this linked up in the show notes for you. You guys can check it out. Those of you that are on blogger.com, it's probably something that you should consider. Hey, I'm just about dancing the jig here. And the reason I am is because Clearwire has announced its plans to bring WiMAX mobile broadband to 8 major markets in 2009 with coverage for 80 markets and 120 million people in 2010. So, I'm reading through this list, and it says that in 2010, Clearwire says it will bring WiMAX to Atlanta, Las Vegas, Chicago, Charlotte, Dallas-Fort Worth area, Honolulu, Philadelphia, and no. It says, oh, in 2009. Oh, no. Yes. Let me look at this again. No, Clearwire says it will bring WiMAX to Atlanta, Las Vegas, Chicago, Charlotte, Dallas, Fort Worth, Honolulu, Philadelphia, and Seattle during 2009 with New York, Boston, Washington, D.C., Houston, and San Francisco first in line for WiMAX service in 2010. So probably because Honolulu's already pre-wired for Clearwire, bringing Clear on board, that's beautiful. 2009 WiMAX, I cannot wait. I really cannot. Las Vegas, it's huge, folks. For them bringing WiMAX on board in time for CES 2010, that's going to be big as well. It's going to help us do some things we have never been able to do, so long as our network can support all the geeks out there that we're going to have WiMAX connections to them, because we are going to push some video. Yes, we will this next year. It'll be live. You guys will be able to watch us live in Vegas next year. So I'm excited because it's coming to Honolulu. So my Clearwire coverage is pretty good. I'm in a good spot, so I'm looking forward to more speed. Really am. All right, over on digitaltrends.com, Cydia has opened a rogue app store for jailbroken iPhones. Jay Freeman, the developer of Cydia application installer for jailbroken phones, has launched an app store chock full of tools you will not find via the iTunes app store. So I'm going to have this linked up in the show notes. You guys can check that out. It appears Cydia does not assist with jailbreaking iPhone, it says. Although there are no firm numbers, estimates place the numbers of jailbreaking iPhones and iPod Touch units currently in use at over 2 million. So for those of you that are out there that have a jailbroken iPhone, hey, you know what I'm seeing here in Japan? I've been seeing people with iPhones, been asking them what the deal is. They're all, almost to a person that I've talked to, have either mail-ordered them from Thailand at a much lower price, and they have all been jailbroken, and then they buy a SIM card in service here in Japan and do it that way. They're not buying the phones, at least the American people that I met, they're not buying the phones in Japan. They're buying them in a third, you know, in Thailand or other places like that, where they come delivered already jailbroke. Beautiful. It's a beautiful thing. It really is what they're doing here. So, and I don't know what he says he pays like half the price of what it cost in the United States. So apparently Apple is even, you know, helping with keep the cost down for the phones in Thailand. All right, Seagate has announced it's doubled hard drive speeds with new 6 gigabyte per second SATA drives. And SATA 3, this is a new set of drives that are going to be coming on board later this year. I think they're one of several hard drive companies that are going to be introducing SATA 3 and this new 6 gigabit per second limit. Most of the SATA drives now have been at 3 gigabytes per second, which is from 3 to 6. That's fast. It really is. And some exciting things that they've talked about with RAID and some, you know, being able to use, you know, essentially 20, 30, 40 SATA drives in a RAID configuration, transferring data at these, you know, these huge speeds are making some IT managers essentially have their mouth is watering trying to get their hands on some of this new gear. But it'll be exciting to see what happens with these SATA 3 drives. You know, I got some machines at home that I think are still just standard IDE drives, or, you know, they're not even eSATA. So over on businessweek.com, there's a new website that is getting a lot of attention the last couple of days, and it's coming from a gentleman by the name of Stefan Wolfram, and he is developing this guy's a pretty major player. He's not just some kook. This guy is famous as the inventor of Mathematica. It's a multifaceted program that made the computer a useful tool for serious mathematics, and slightly notorious as author of A New Kind of Science. It's a 1,200-page a book that attempts to explain a vast natural phenomenon in terms of cellular automa. Okay, whatever here. But anyway, they're going to launch a site in May where they're using computational power, math computational power, to deliver answers to questions within this new search engine. And some people that have seen it are like, whoa, it's major. And this could be a major competitor with, they've used the Google killer word a couple of times. I'll believe it when I see it. But it looks like, I'm looking here on the actual page, I haven't went over to the website, but there might even be an alpha site. If you go to Wolf Wolfram, W-O-L, excuse me, I'm going to have to hover over this again, W-O-L-F, Wolf, Fram, F-A-R-M, F-R-A-M, alpha.com. You may be able to check this thing out. I'll do so. If you guys get over there and play with it, let me know what you think about the search results or if it's giving you what you think it should. How many have Google Docs? I use Google Docs. We use Google Docs a lot. It's a great collaborative tool. Well, Google had a little bit of a problem, and it appears that Google Docs was leaking private data online. There's a way we can set the data within the docs private. No one else can see it. You can share it within a group. But it appears that there was some sort of bug and exposed a bunch of private documents to the online world. And they are contacting the parties affected. If you're one of the parties affected, I'd love to hear from you. Someone in this audience is using Google Docs that was affected, and if you were, I'd love to hear from you. I'd love to hear how what the response was and if you had anything super sensitive that may have been leaked out. All right, antivirus ID. Excuse me, let me start over. This is an article on InfoWorld, and it's an article and a research study that was done by Panda Security, where they have got a free website system called ActiveScan. And if you go over to pandasecurity.com/ActiveScan, they allow you to do a full scan of your system for free using this online ActiveScan test site. And what they found over the past year is that 1% of the systems that Panda Security Test Site tested were infected with apps designed to help bad guys steal passwords, banking information, private sensitive letters, that kind of stuff. So they feel that as many as 12 million PCs are infected with these types of programs. And how many, let me look at the, 67 million people tried out the free ActiveScan test site last year, and 1% of the of those that were scanned were found to have this really bad stuff on it. They're seeing a big increase in Trojans and different types of rootkit stuff. There's just a huge influx of this going on. So be very, very careful out there. Don't use the same passwords, you know, on every site. And if you are, you're setting yourself up for failure. You know, make sure that you're watching your banking stuff very closely. Have credit watches put on your credit reports. You know, all these things you can do to make sure you're not, you know, especially all of you that listen to the show, you're all living an online life. You're all internet junkies like I am. You're all out there looking for information. And you're going to all these different websites, and, you know, it doesn't matter what browser you're using, you're still susceptible to, you know, stuff making it into your machine that may be new, that virus protection isn't even seeing. So be real careful out there, okay? All right, I don't know why researchers would want to do this, but researchers have found that they can use relatively cheap scanners to fingerprint paper. That's right. They take a piece of paper, doesn't have to have any type of print on it whatsoever. They can scan it, and it with a 12-megapixel camera, with a scanner, 12-megapixel scanner. Then they turn it 90 degrees, they scan it again, and then they turn it in a different direction, and they scan it again a third time. And from that, they're able to detect subtle differences between pieces of paper. Okay. They say that their technique could be used to identify counterfeit money, tickets, and even packaging containers. They're saying a drug company like Pfizer, for example, could take fingerprint of their labels when they're shipped, and this data could be verified later by government company representative or to spot fakes. And using public key encryption, companies could even create self-authenticating packages that could be checked by special scammers. Scammers. What do you guys think about that? Practical? I don't know. Limited usage? Yes. Stuff that you and I are going to probably use? No. I don't know. Another good article around CNET is there is a, if you work at a company today and you are traveling a lot, your company probably requires you to encrypt the data on your hard drive. So in case you're hard drive, or in case your laptop is stolen, the data contained within it is not, it's not available to that person to review, or, you know, to for that person to see. So there's a push right now by a group of people that they are pushing the federal government. And I think the federal government is doing this already, but they want the federal government to make any federal procurement of any type of computers to require them to buy hard drives that are self-encrypting. Now, what you find is that there are some drives on the market. I believe Hitachi, Seagate, Fujitsu, maybe a couple more are already shipping drives that will, or soon will ship drives that are self-encrypting. And for laptop and desktop computers. So I don't know what this performance hit is on these, but it's kind of spooky. You know, you're in a foreign country or anywhere, and I know as much as I travel, staying in hotel rooms, generally I leave my Mac sitting here in my room. I normally take my other computer with me, my semi-quasi production or work machine. And, that one, it's got personal information on it. I don't really have that information on my Mac, but how many laptops are stolen out of hotel rooms, at the airport, people leaving them places where they shouldn't, all the time. And, you let's just think about what would happen if your data was lost due to, someone grabbing your laptop and running off with it. What would the impact be? I think it would be big. So I think this self-encrypting hard drives is very, very smart. I really do. All right, we're on the Sunday Herald. This is a very funny article. And it's really not that funny, because have you ever made something and it turned out pretty good, and then you later tried to make that same thing again and it didn't come out as good because you didn't have instructions? Imagine that if you are planning to refurbish, yes, I'm saying refurbish, Trident nuclear weapons, and could not find the instructions on how to build some material that was used to build the weapons initially. I love how they say this. It says the U.S. National Nuclear Security Administration lost knowledge of how to make a mysterious but very hazardous material. And they're saying that to a congressional oversight committee, they're saying that they are spending significant resources to figure out how to remake this stuff. Now, I don't know when these things were made originally, but they lost the instructions on how to build a nuke. It just doesn't make any sense, does it? You would think that that would be something that would be very well documented and very well secured away someplace where, come on. It just blows me away. It's okay, all right, we lose a recipe, but these guys have lost the recipe on how to build these things. I just, I'm like, wow, that's pretty big. So I'm sure they got some big heads from one of the national labs or something working on how to make whatever this material is, this highly hazardous material. But your taxpayer dollars at work, folks, for those of you that live here in the United States. All right, moving on to a little more a serious article on the blogging side. Should bloggers be afforded the same rights granted to journalists? I think we've talked about this a number of times on the show. But there is a big case going on right now. Here's this organization that a lot of people don't necessarily agree with, the ACLU of Virginia and the Thomas Jefferson Center for Freedom of Expression have interviewed in a case in Buckingham County, Virginia, in which a plaintiff, I'm reading from the article here, this is off of TechDirt, in Virginia, which a plaintiff in a defamation case retaliated against a blogger who covered his defamation suit in less than flattering terms by sending a highly invasive subpoena that demands production of the blogger's communication with his sources, IP numbers of all who posted on his website, or even read the website. Wow, this is interesting. So these guys are going to this Thomas Jefferson Center for Freedom of, you know, any center that is using the Thomas Jefferson name makes you go, they must be very important. Well, I hope they are. And ACLU of Virginia is going to be involved in this as well. It doesn't say who else, but they're going to go into battle for this blogger and give him some legal assistance, I guess. So we'll see what happens with this. And you know, I think we've all pretty much realized at this point what you write online is, you know, is subject to litigation. And what you say or what I say in this type of venue as well, my podcast, is also. So, you know, you have to be very careful in how you say things. It's great to have an opinion, but to state something directly in a derogatory manner or something that it cannot be backed up is very, very dangerous. And all rules apply in the letter of law when it's, you know, respecting podcasts or blogging. And you have to be very careful on how you say things. It's okay to have an opinion and state the opinion and make sure people know it's your opinion, but it's also very, very, very dangerous to say this person is this and not have the proof to back it up. So anyway, I have this linked up for you. Blame game continues, and this is the blame game that is now being perpetrated. Did you know that legal streaming music... Okay, did you know, I'm saying this again, that legally streamed music, the folks that are paying a royalty back to ASCAP, BMI, all those folks are getting their hands in their revenue stream, has been adjudicated by the Copyright Office and everything that we've talked about on this show, you know, in dozens of shows in the past. Did you know that these legally operated online streaming sites are killing music? This is a new angle. Industry insiders say that it's now legal online streaming services that are killing the music business. Can you know, if I had my daughter here, I'd have her play some violin. And you know, maybe do that death march. You know, maybe that's what we need to have, some death march music for the show. If someone that's listening to the show can find a little music clip that's not copyrighted, it's got that death march, dun, 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 dun. You know, we'll have to start playing that on the show because, yes, music is dying because the streaming music, hello, they're paying for it. I don't get it. All right, let's talk about Hulu and let's talk about Boxy. You know, Boxy, big fan. I'm a big, big, big fan of Boxy. Well, the Hulu-Boxy battle is heating up. And the folks at Boxy are pretty smart. What they found is that Hulu puts all of their videos and content in RSS feeds. Okay, all of you that are listening to this podcast, you know what that means. That means if you have a podcatcher, you can go over and subscribe to the Hulu feed of your choice, maybe the show that you're watching or whatever. And every day that new stuff comes out, you can have that downloaded immediately to your computer where you can watch it or you can take it on your iPod or your Zune or whatever you may want to download it to and watch it. But if you have if you've got Boxy installed and you try to, what Boxy did is they subscribe to all the RSS feeds. Oh, shame, shame. Subscribing to the RSS feeds and the folks at Hulu said, oh, that's not allowed. You can't do that. And so they blocked them. They put a technical block in. Well, the folks over at Boxy, they're not stupid. They know how to work the magic with the IP stuff. And they, you know, they were able to subscribe to the Hulu feed that they put about publicly available for everyone else to use and made it available to Boxy users again. Bravo. Bravo to the Boxy folks. And, you know, they're just distributing content, right? So they're a glorified iTunes, glorified podcatcher like iPodder or like Zune Marketplace where you can download podcasts and so forth. Interesting, yeah? So, we'll see what happens. I'm sure this battle is going to continue, but Hulu definitely is, they are scared to death of companies like Boxy who are removing the middleman at many, many levels. Hey, we heard about the GM Volt, that electrically, that new car that they're going to be producing. Well, if GM's still around, because I guess they're now they're thinking about going into bankruptcy. Now, how much money have they taken? Well, anyway, When the Chevrolet concept car was revealed in 2007, everyone was pretty fanatic. Now, the new final production vehicle, which is supposed to come out in late in 2010, have a top speed of 100 miles per hour and have a charge time of 8 hours. The new production vehicle design is just absolutely beautiful. It really is. Makes me go, if GM's still around, maybe I'll buy one of these. I don't know what they're going to cost, if I can even afford it or not. But this is it's looking slick. You know, nice technology and a nice sedan. Yes, very nice. Wait to see this Wired.com article. I'll have it linked up for you. Okay, countdown is underway for the shuttle launch. The Wednesday night launch of Shuttle Discovery on a mission to the International Space Station is going to be is happening at 9:20 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. So you guys are all on. You guys watch your. If those of you in the United States, except for like Indiana and a few other small areas, you guys change your clocks this weekend or previous weekend, it was last weekend. And so STS-119 is. You'll see live coverage, of course, on the NASA website or on NASA TV. So we're looking forward to a launch and the next delivery of some truss material and solar arrays to the International Space Station. So keep you advised on that. I think I don't know if I'm going to be airborne when that goes down. I'm going to have to look at my schedule. Hey, the Kepler mission, the launch has taken place. A Delta II rocket has successfully launched NASA's Kepler spacecraft. It's a mission to search for Earth-like planets around other stars. The Delta II rocket lifted off on schedule and delivered to orbit the Kepler spacecraft. And I guess everything so far is two thumbs up from all the teams. Okay, what else have I got here? Well, I've got an article that someone sent me an email and said, "Hey, Todd. You know, Firefox has had many more security vulnerabilities than IE or any other application out there or any other browser out there." He said, why do you always say that Firefox is more secure? And I don't know necessarily say it's more secure, but it's more secure than IE generally. And that's my opinion. That's what I think is going to be proven out in this article that I'm going to refer you to. But what they're saying is, and this comes from the folks over at Mozilla themselves, they're saying security metrics are very difficult to do well and easily to do poorly. And there was a report done on the browsers, Verity browsers, by a company called Sukuna. And they did this in late 2008. And they basically said, Firefox had 115 vulnerabilities were registered in 2008 as compared to Safari and Opera having 32 and 30 respectively. Well, what he goes on to say is that Mozilla, no matter how small the security issue is, they publish everything. These other companies are not required to acknowledge, nor do they post all of the security issues that are revolving around their browsers. They only do the major ones. So Firefox has a complete transparent process in security issue reporting. So that's why they feel that they're unfairly been brandished as having more vulnerabilities, because these other companies are just not more forthcoming of what is going on inside their browsers. So, you know, I had gotten that email probably a month ago, and I really didn't have anything to respond to it with. So hopefully for the listener that sent that, that kind of answers that question. But I'll have this link up for you. You can kind of check the information out yourself and even read the report that Sukuna put out in 2008. If you're looking for some add-ons for your browser, you definitely want to check out some cool music add-ons. I have a list of 16 of them available for you via Mashable. I have this link up in the show notes. You know, the C Crane Company, I interviewed them at CES. They're coming out with a LED light bulb, or they have it on the market. Well, the folks at Philips are going to be producing an LED light bulb. This is going to be released in July. And what's blew me away here is the price point. It's going to be between $50 and $70, which is going to be cheaper than the C-Crane product, and looks almost the same in its design makeup. But they feel that these lights are going to have a lifetime of around 45,000 hours, which is, you know, considerably more than the CFLs, which they figure have a 10,000 hour performance or lifetime. As compared to a standard bulb, so they only have around 750. So keep you advised on this, and hey, just another way to save energy, but at a pretty expensive price point at this point. A good article on Gizmodo talking about comparison between VMware and Parallels on which it has a better performance. For those of you using Parallels, you're getting a little bit better performance than those of you that are using VMware Fusion. So I have this linked up. They've got some benchmarks for you to check out as well. Hey, if all of you that are geeks, right? Everyone's listening to the show, listens to Geek News Central, so we're all geeks, we're all techies, right? So, you know, I'm not much into watching Dancing with the Stars. That's kind of not my thing. But Woz is going to be dancing in Dancing Stars, or he is dancing in Dancing the Stars. I don't know if this has already started or not, but because Woz is dancing, don't you think we ought to get the geek factor going here? And wouldn't it be cool for a geek to win this? So I'm not telling you to go out there and vote for Woz just because he's a geek, but I think it might be kind of a cool thing to have this kind of like this battle cry and, you know, have all the geeks voting for him every week on Dancing with the Stars. And even if he's the worst dancer, I don't care how he dances. We just ought to, you know, work the system so that that he ends up winning. So it should be entertaining. Nonetheless, I'm sure that'll be some of the most watched YouTube videos with Woz dancing. I just don't see Woz dancing that much. Hey, Robin Good has a good article on creating a blog. It's a free hosted blog publishing services mini guide. So it speaks for itself. I have that linked up in the show notes. He's got a lot of great suggestions in there as well. Hey, Walt Mossberg did an article in Wall Street Journal, of course, talking about the new Safari browser. And he says he's pretty impressed with the speed of the Safari browser and loading web pages and everything that he's doing with it online. But he says its feature set is just so far behind everything else, it's almost degrades the, you know, all of the greatness and speed that they have. So those of you using Safari, I'd love to hear what you guys are experience you're having with it. You can always send, again, email to geeknews@gmail.com or you call the voicemail hotline, 1-9-342-7365. All right, we're here at the end of the content. Hey, I'm actually almost on my regular scheduled time tonight, but I have something I have to share with you. I've already listened to these voicemails. And let me go ahead and get this ready, and I'm going to go ahead and cue this up. But I want you guys to listen to this first voicemail that I got, and let me go ahead and play this to you. There's two clips. So can you just imagine someone like this calling my voicemail hotline? Oh, here we go.
Pre-qualified leads for life. This tool changed my business overnight.
It did.
It's that good.
Really?
Press 1 now for more free information. Press 9 to be removed.
I can't press 9. There's no way to press 9 because you called my voicemail hotline. So it's amazing here that you called me to share this information about your great product and service with. Now, let's see if I remember which one I have loaded here. Let me play the next voicemail that came in to my voicemail hotline. Let's see if we can. I hope this is the other one. Let me look here at the one. Yeah, this is a different one. Here we go.
All the grunt work and rejection out of your business immediately.
Really?
Again, press 1 now for more free information. Press 9 to be removed.
Now, to think that this idiot, or this idiot service, called me twice, I don't get it. Who in their right mind is going to respond to a marketing message like that? Don't you hate those automated, hey, if you're interested about my get-rich scheme and how you can pay me $999 and get this 22-page pamphlet on how to do what I'm doing? we'll see how many more of those we get. No real human callers to the voicemail this month or this week. But we did have that whack job, and there was those particular. You know what I did at the beginning of the show? Did I say it was Friday? No, I don't. I don't think it's actually Tuesday, right? I'm looking at my calendar here because I'm going back to the last show so I can get the emails here. Okay, let me see here. Okay, I got an email from Tom. He says, "Hang in there, Todd. You must be going through withdrawal. Get some good Japanese food. I hope your back is feeling better." My back is feeling much, much better, Tom. Thanks for asking. And I have been definitely sampling the great Japanese food. Matter of fact, we're going out, a group of us are going out tonight to a restaurant, and we're going to be having steak. It's a Japanese, it's a place called Four Seasons, and I'll just share with you guys the tale about this steak when I get home. Some of you may not it's Kobe. How many of you are familiar with Kobe steak? Have you ever had Kobe steak in Japan or outside the United States? The real Kobe steak in the United States cannot be sold because of the way the animal is raised. And but if you've never tasted Kobe steak, it's absolutely awesome. So we're going to a traditional Kobe steak place tonight to have. It's something I have at least one time every time I come to Japan because it's so good. It is a little bit pricey, but it's awful, awful tasty. So I'm going to go have that tonight. So it is what you would call a traditional Japanese dish, at least a modern traditional Japanese dish. Got an email from Bree. He says, "Hey, Dave, I fired off the email about not getting the GNC newsletter from Jan. Of course, Friday announcement just arrived. This is the first one of the Japanese newsletter I received. Maybe the glitch has gone. Bree, you know what it was? I forgot to send it on Tuesday. It was my bust. So that's why the newsletter didn't happen two shows ago. So it won't happen again. But I was so jet-lagged that I blew it. So I apologize on that. You'll be getting the show notes tonight. Got an email from Jeffrey. He says, "Hey, Todd, I noted on Geekazine that in watching the HP video CES 2009, the HP Home Server EX45 is also $599 for a one drive 750 gigabyte model, and the EX7487 is $749 for the two drive 1.5 terabyte. The processor is only a Celeron, and I'm not sure what type of video card you get for it, but if you back up your existing Macs, you can clear up space and keep your computer cleaner and running fast. I wonder if you can Hackintosh a HP home server. By the way, I got two things from Circuit City. 2 gigs for the laptops, $20, originally $40, and Microsoft Money, $24, originally $80. It was my first purchase ever in a Circuit City. Anyway, hope the back is well. Talk to you soon. Jeffrey, thanks so much. And, back's doing great. And, the thing about the home server is you don't have to worry about what type of video card it has in it because you never plug it into a monitor. You go into it virtually from another PC. So you actually VM into the machine and operate it that way. I got a link from Paul. He said, "This is an amazing thing. Just put your mouse on a city anywhere in the world and the newspaper headlines pop up. Double click and the page gets larger. Have fun." And I'll have the link up to it in the show notes. Got an email from Kevin. He said, "Hey, Todd, longtime listener, love the show. So I think your comments on the piece, this is about Scoble's $1 million sponsorship not renewed. He says, I think your comments on the piece was out of line. I more than understand. $1 million is a whole lot of money, but your comment, wow. I wonder how much Scoble was banking, was off base. You know full well, if any other podcaster said, I wonder how much money Cochran is making off his go-to-PC ads, you would laugh and chuckle and say, that is not something we discuss in public forum. Granted, it's probably nowhere near $1 million, but the point is, it's not of anyone's business. Maybe I took it the wrong way, not sure, but I wanted to give you my 2 cents worth. Keep up the good work. Kevin from Indianapolis." You know, Kevin, you're probably right. I probably was off base on that. But I think my shock was that it was $1 million sponsorship for a single show. That's what I think I was blown away with, that it was $1 million sponsorship for a single show, for a single production. That's where I think that the shock factor was on that. So, you know, I don't care what Scoble makes. I hope he made a lot of money. I really do. But I was just pretty much blown away that it was a single show. You know, obviously he'd done a lot of interviews and stuff. And, it is curious. It really is. So again, probably right on the comments, but maybe my interpretation of, or what, how you interpreted what I was trying to say was incorrect. I probably didn't express myself right. But, if I could get $1 million sponsorship for this show, you have no idea. It would never happen in the first place. But I'm almost positive that my audience, my listening or viewing audience, is as big as his listening audience. This audience of the show is huge. It really, really is. It's very, very large. So, but it's, I don't, is it worth $1 million? No way. Not for the single, for this single show. It's not worth it. It just isn't. Even if I was doing shows 5 days a week, it would not be worth $1 million a year. Just, you know, I don't think so. In the ROI delivered back to the company. Moving on here, I got an email from Lamar, and he says, "Hey, Yahoo is out of touch. Gmail is far more superior, even as a beta. The problem with Yahoo is they're a spam magnet. Been using my Gmail for a while now. Do not have to pay for SMT or IMAP. Major cool for me. I still have my Yahoo account because I have several Yahoo groups that have been in place for years. Maybe I'll try the Google groups now. Bottom line, I agree with you. Take care. Lamar, sent via his iPhone 3G. You know, Lamar, I think the thing I found is I just have never been impressed with Yahoo Mail. That's been my concern. And Gmail has been really, really good. You know, it allowed, I don't have to serve all my domains, Geek News Central, ToddBlog.com, Blueberry.com, PodcasterNews.com, TechPodcast.com, all of those domains, and some of those are Raw Voices domains, and some of those are mine. All of the domains that I have, our email is hosted on Google Apps. I don't do any more email functions. I don't have to process the, keep the server's virus scripts up to date, none of that stuff. And guess what? My spam is almost non-existent across all those domains. Before, couldn't keep up. Could not keep up. So that's why I love, it is not necessarily Gmail, but Google Apps is exactly like Gmail. It's your geeknewscentral.com right on, it looks like Gmail when you load it up. Same type of stuff. So anyway, that's kind of my take on that. Got an email from Joe. And he said, "Hey, Todd, longtime listener of the podcast and just purchased a 5-year deal with GoDaddy for my new startup website. I was laid off from my freight supervisor job in December, first job after leaving the Marines in 2005. And after getting few to no responses to my resume, I decided to pay myself instead. I haven't uploaded anything yet. I'll do the design myself. But after comparing what I paid to some friends with websites, your promo codes made them horribly jealous." Well, share those promo codes with them, Joe. "I do appreciate your association with such great sponsors. Thanks again, Joe." And he said, "Hey, this is part of a shameless plug, so you can skip it if you want. So my company is called Tech Minds, and I provide technological consultation and support for home users and small businesses in the Denver, Colorado area. I am Microsoft Certified MCTS, and though the website hasn't launched, I can be contacted 24/7 by phone or email. If any of you are in Denver and you're looking for a MCTS and need some technical support and want to throw Joe a bone, you can reach Joe. His email address is yourtechminds@gmail.com. Now, Joe, that is exactly how you do it on the show. That's how we drive business to you through listeners of the show. So if you're in Denver, Ohana, and you want to support one of the Ohana, Joe's looking for, obviously, for consultation business. And I applaud you, Joe, for going out there and being your own boss. I hope you have a very successful business, and I hope it grows widely beyond your biggest dreams, and good luck, and thanks for the testimonial. Keep us advised how things go with your website, and I hope that we were some small part of that inspiration to do that. All right, folks, we're in hour 7, almost hour 8 minutes, and more like a regular show is, and I'm kind of like in the groove here. It's time to pack the studio up and go home. And so then I'll have to get back in the groove of using the home studio, and we'll be back live on Ustream as well. So, and of course, at the weird time. So we hope that those of you there in the parts of the world that can be on when I'm on doing the Ustream, you'll do that and you join me. And I'll be starting to get caught up here and spending time with the family. Hope you guys are enjoying the podcast. I surely love bringing it to you. And it is something that I look forward to twice a week, even though here in Japan I had to record on Fridays. That, if I was living here, we'd have to make an adjustment. because, you know, you can't go out and have any social time because I'm doing it in the evenings. If I lived here, it would be different, but I'm not living here. I'm visiting. So it has been a terrific visit. I've had a great time in the land down under, not land down under, the land of the rising sun, and met some great people. Have had some great takeaway memories from here. Really happy to, although be on the way home. But anyway, everyone have a great week. And we'll see you on Friday from Honolulu and from Okinawa, Japan, as they officially say here in the land of the rising sun. Sayonara.